Welcome to the Frontier Psychiatrist Podcast. I am thrilled to be joined by my good friend, Jeremy Fox.
Hey, everyone. It's awesome to be here again. It's Jeremy Fox, licensed therapist, trauma specialist, men's health enthusiast. Men have mental health too, fun fact.
Or a lack thereof.
Yeah. Be more appropriate for our discussion.
So Jeremy and I were talking before this, and the thing we decided to focus on today was the issue of loneliness, which we don't generally think about as a health concern. We don't have the loneliness report is 15%. Right. God, it's creeping in Philadelphia, right? And at the same time, I feel like of things that we don't routinely measure, this is probably something that has more of an impact on how I feel day to day. And maybe anything else. Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I love the humor there. And we actually might need that kind of report. So Vivek Murthy released, months ago about the public health impact of loneliness. And like you said, there's really, it's a problem that we haven't looked at this way before as a public health issue. But we know that loneliness can actually have an impact akin to smoking cigarettes, which is a lot to unpack, but it reduces life expectancy. And we know that body-mind divide just isn't there, that our mental health impacts our physical health. So it makes sense. People are really tribal communal entities. And so had a massive rise in loneliness, especially where men are concerned. We have a much sharper decline in friendships over the past 30 years for men. 15% of men report having no close friends at all. So I want to linger on that. That's none. That's no close friends.
None.
Compared to 10% of women who will say they have no close friends. So, and there's different reasons for that. We can speculate and discuss, but there's quite a bit of disconnect and loneliness now, in especially as impacting men. And now we're getting the statistics that back that up and the impact of loneliness on physical health.
So when one of the kind of developmental tasks of childhood has interaction with others built in, like you go to school.
Yes.
And or did.
Right? Yes.
And it was easy to think in the midst of the 2020, we have a pandemic. Oh my gosh. It's important to keep everyone safe from the harmful effects of a virus by keeping us apart.
Yes.
And that's true for virus-related health.
Right.
We didn't know how risky COVID would be. It's still going to have a long tail of health impacts from the virus itself. But it turns out there are externalities to the treatment. There's a side effect to avoiding everybody else.
Yes.
Which is you don't spend time together.
Right.
Outside your immediate family, if you even have that.
Right.
That was virtuous.
Mm-hmm.
What did we miss?
So that's a great topic. I think just as therapists, we tell our clients to think dialectically, think both and rather than either or, right? That as public health and therapeutic providers, we have to look at both. You can have that separation temporarily for the sake of literal global health, and you can see the negative impact there and want to get back to interpersonal contact when appropriate, right? Because again, human beings are social entities. We know that Zoom-based communication and therapy does work. We also know that interpersonal contact in person is great, and you need that. So we were missing that capacity for real-time dynamic back and forth. There's people, especially with ADHD, who don't connect as well with Zoom and Skype and Teams-based meeting, especially if you associate a screen with the download of information onto you versus real-time interaction like what you and I are doing. I think that was something that we've discovered after the COVID epidemic. And how would we know that before that, really? We've had a giant laboratory here of online communication that was everything interpersonal was bottlenecked into Zoom and other things during the pandemic. And so we got to see how that impacts people differentially based on their own neurodynamics. And so you get people who are more likely to zone out on screens saying, hey, this isn't working for me. I need a return to in-person stuff. And in worst case, they were basically told, that's not real. You're not, that's not a thing. And so there was some gaslighting there of people in a really unfortunate way. But I think coming out of it the other end, we're saying, hey, relationships and friendships take effort. And where we can remove those pain points of having to schedule a Zoom thing, having to get a link, having to do all that, and instead integrate that organically, like a weekly hangout or something in that nature, there's going to be an increase there in well-being. And when everything feels artificial, it can really throw people's socialization off, because we've been doing the social thing for thousands of years.
Right. It's a feature that we've evolved with and for.
Right. So when you impede that in novel ways, you're going to see some interesting blowback and some interesting unintended negative effects. And look at when people have bad connections when it comes to, and I don't mean literally, I don't mean metaphorically, like if you're on a bad date and it's not a good connection. Literally with Zoom, if you're garbled and you're having poor quality there, that adds on to any kind of interpersonal mismatch. And for teens, like missing the high school experience, for college kids, missing that and being able to sit behind the computer and not being forced to have the awkwardness of being around new people and say, wait a minute, I can throw in a line here and make people laugh. Or I discovering that self-efficacy was robbed of an entire generation, I think.
So that one of the issues that Hanging Out addresses, and we met for our audience on Clubhouse, which was
yes.
a social audio app, which was, you know, magic for a little while. But the format was good because it forced you to both do things in real time.
Yes.
And there is something about hanging out and real timeness mm-hmm. that's different than getting to think about it when you're typing.
Yes.
Or working asynchronously. And I've met people who I've met on Twitter, right? And we get along great in some cases, but the hit rate of people I've originally connected with on Clubhouse, a you have to talk to each other in real time app. Mm-hmm. It turns out the people I made friendships with on Clubhouse, I get along with in real life.
Yeah, I don't think that's coincidental. I mean, if you can hold a conversation with a stranger for 30 minutes, an hour, what have you, synchronously, and you have that dynamic magic connection, that poppiness, that back and forth banter, then that bodes well for continued contact. That's not, you send an email back and forth and you can connect with almost anyone if you're a mental health specialist, if you're a psychiatrist. Like, we learn how to generate rapport very well in these fields. But when it's immediate and it's not difficult, when it's easy, when there's no friction, that really shows that you have that capacity to bond with someone. And that's something people can extrapolate and say, well, who do I get along with that way? Or how can I enter situations where I can screen for that and not be afraid if it's not a hit? I think people are more of a rejection averse than ever, but we have more opportunities to be rejected than ever. Hello, online dating. Hello.
Part of it is just thinking about the challenge of synchronous communication,
yes.
which, look, we took for granted forever because that was all there was. Right. You're either writing in the newspaper or in the handwritten in a book. The baseline was talking at the same time as someone was listening.
Yes, it was.
And humans got good at that. And that builds a whole skill set. Mm-hmm. Knowing how to tell a shitty joke, not very funny, and recover from it is a crucial skill. And having a world in which teens were told to stay in their bedroom and mm-hmm. only talk to each other in as influencers back and forth on Instagram.
Sure.
So they got to edit their jokes and obsess about the metrics. And I did not, I'm in my 40s. So all of this was novel to me and
sure.
not the things I expected. But there's a lack of practice in doing it in real time.
You're right. It's extemporaneous. It's spontaneous.
And when you can opt out of spontaneous, you don't necessarily develop the skills that might be useful to you.
No, you don't. It's interesting because you've now made me remember my high school debate days, right? And I loved doing, so I did policy debate, and just very brief overview. You have someone who comes up and presents the case, and that's what I would do. I would come up and give a case on some position, right? And then my teammate would come up and defend it after the other team came on to rebut. And so I really enjoyed having a polished speech that I could read and inflection and tone and mastering all those things as a team. Oh, this is great. This sounds awesome. But then when it's time for cross-examination, you have to be quick on your feet. And I think that's crucial. Like teen me would probably be annoyed at me saying, yeah, that's good. Stand there and be awkward and figure it out. But ultimately, that is what's required on a smaller scale. Like when you get the wrong amount of change back at Starbucks, how about that? Or when you have to have an interaction with a stranger who's another human being, and instead of sending in a help desk ticket, you have to talk to someone. Those are things that I think you're in my generation. So as a millennial, I'll just own it. I think we began that process of eliminating friction, or rather the people who created the technology we used, right? Of let's just send in a ticket. We have so many jokes and memes about rather preferring so much over a phone call. I don't want to do a phone call. If it's uncomfortable for a minute, so much the better for resilience, not to sound too boomer-esque. But there are these points where we've automated so much and we've made it where that's not worth my personality or my attention. What becomes worth that? Because if anything, if you basically create like those old school dating videos where you'd create like a 10-minute thing and send it out, it's if all your interactions are like a dating video to say, here's who I am, reach out if you're interested, you're going to be robotic. And it's, I think a huge element of it is it reduces your capacity to respond in real time from a place of authenticity and resilience and humor and the ability to say, oh, that's not what I meant. Or maybe I didn't sound so great and let me refine that. Like when you create more glass, like it's a glass self, like you're tempering some glass better and better. But if that breaks, you're completely ruined emotionally.
The things that we end up valuing asynchronously, we're allocating our personality, like you said, but you got to have a personality to allocate.
You do, not just phrases.
And
pull string Woody doll.
What do you do when someone interrupts you? Right. There is a lot of getting it wrong that leads to the ability to get it right on average. So why are men different?
I love that question. So there's been some amazing articles about that have come out. And so there's one in particular I really like. By Rachel Giese, called The Epidemic of Isolation of Young Men. And she discusses that male friendships throughout history were very valued, and it was almost a kinship and a deep emotional style of writing up through like the Victorian era of male friendships. And then somewhere in more recent times, like the past 100 years or so, it's been considered suspicious if men were too close, that that might indicate some same-sex romance there. But that's a very, that's a extremely new idea that male friendship should be viewed suspiciously that way, or that it was in that way indicative of romance. So that's a huge factor.
So to check, I'm understanding that, the historical standard was bromance was normative.
100% yes. It became more of a concern that men be spending so much time with work and home with their wife and their kids. And that was the dichotomy versus a lot of extracurricular hanging out at different lodges and smoking rooms and things like that, right? There became more pressure on the nuclear family just being men's social outlet.
Yeah. I'm hearing in the background a siren. And I was talking with Chuck DeSmith in a prior episode of this podcast, who's a fireman. And one of the things he highlighted is that in the traditional world of firefighting, when he started, one of the reasons he loved it was fun.
Right.
He loved working with the rest of the guys and women. And as they had the appropriate move towards a more egalitarian system and taking, it wasn't your whole life in that, there was less hanging out in the locker room.
Right.
And if you have a job where you hang out with guys, because there's a lot of downtime.
Right.
If you're in medicine or a fireman or fire human police, et cetera, those traditionally male careers, there was hanging out time with other guys.
Right.
And so maybe their tale of having disconnection took a little bit longer, but it's here for them too. Because I think what you're saying is accurate. Like I like hanging out with my kids, but
of course.
I don't know that they like hanging out with me as much because they've got YouTube.
Right. Technology again. There we go.
And it's like me trying to sell reading a story to my kids is it's not easy because Mr. Beast is much more not like storyteller on a video. So there's a kind of a it, just like cooking, right? There's cooking that takes a while and you can make some great food that's healthy and it's not junk food. But there are junk food social interactions also.
You nailed it. Absolutely. I like to call it processed communication. And that's what we do through social media and dating. It sustains you, but it doesn't nourish you, right? It's foggy. You get enough to get by, but you're still yearning for more. It's like you're hungry later.
So let's talk a little bit about social communication and the role of dating for men. So okay. There's a piece of data that I'm aware of that I'll share with you and you can respond to it. On dating apps like Tinder, 10% of the guys get 90% of the swipes.
Yes, I've heard this.
And so there is this bizarre experience for women where they'll talk to each other and they'll say, like, all these guys are players. And they're not wrong, but it's the same 10 guys out of 100. Mm. And so there are some men who just visually are getting all the attention. And when you go on a real world date with them, they treat you as disposable because 100% of the women are interested in them. And 90% of the men get no attention whatsoever because, frankly, men visually less, most of us have less going on. There isn't Tinder for funny, right? And so the kind of classic things that men historically got by with.
Sure.
Which we learned with our male friends. Yeah, we learned how to rib each other, how to have a social interaction that involves some humor. We built the ability to go back and forth by spending time with other dudes who made fun of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Riffing, verbal jousting, huh? Right.
And in any long-term relationships, since humor is pretty valuable, not everyone's got it.
Yeah.
But yet, with the exception of one or two lines you have to stand out on a swiping app.
Sure.
The vast majority of things you'd actually care about in a relationship aren't present for you. So women get the experience that all the men that they actually meet are cads. And the 10% of men who have all of the choice on those apps, quite rightly, there's another woman who'll date me tomorrow.
Right.
And so people become disposable to each other. And there's a whole cohort of most of the men who don't get the practice of a social relationship and going on a date that doesn't go well and learning how to be gracious about it. And they're not spending time with their male friends anymore because maybe they do it on a video game, but so much time goes into swiping.
Right.
And so there's this bizarre social experience that leads to unskilled, unfriended dudes.
Right. 100%. And I'm not trying to give pat quick answers here. I'm processing it. So make no mistake, a vast sea change paradigm shift in human courtship dating behavior. It's not the way things were for thousands of years. I mean, we talk about how human beings haven't been on the planet for the entire amount we've been on for a sliver. How much less has this been the way people dated and reproduced?
Right.
Barely a flicker. Barely a blink in the history of the universe. So I think we have to realize that and realize that if this may not be sustainable and what by the online paradigm, I think you're hearing from both sides, the men who, to invoke the I word, you get basically what you're describing is that phenomenon of maybe the incel phenomenon. And there are some that are, that word has been co-opted to mean angry, violent, dangerous men who are involuntarily celibate. I think there's a class that are involuntarily celibate who are resigned to it, who aren't violent. I would say I know that. I've spoken with them. I've had clients who don't really know what's going on in the dating world or how to get a foot in. And they're invisible. There's more like invisible incels. And that's go ahead.
There are dudes who don't have friendships and they don't have close romantic relationships, and they're not building the skills to get them.
No. And I think now the on-ramping to develop that stuff is more, you have to be more intentional, because with Zoom school, and that's any school during COVID, basically, you had to sit at a desk and basically get your download of didactic school content. And you might not have had that same ability yet to riff.
One of the things about school, it's a terrible way to teach people anything on average.
Yes.
Didactics, right? And someone just lecturing you isn't the best for an hour. Is not how adults learn the best. And also, what we underrated was the time in between classes, holding your books outside, where you got to chat with the professor or your classmates or the study session afterwards. And all of that gets wiped away when it's only Zoom.
You're right. The interstitial liminal stuff that was
And maybe that was the important bit.
I think you're on to
It may be that the didactic was the excuse to have the study buddy after.
Yeah.
And that's where the real learning happened, at least for me.
That's where we know that male friendship thrives, is you have an excuse to do something. You have an activity like pickleball. And then throughout that, you get to know the other person. You get to know the guys around you. So what an apropos segue there of, you have something that you all gather around communally. And then you see the popcorn of people's personalities. It's not awkward. Maybe it is initially, but you've all got to be there, right? You're all there for something. And then relationships are formed in the off moments, in the time that there is to make observations and connections.
So much of life is the parts that are not the headline.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, maybe it was for a long time most.
Yes.
What do you do? Well, I'm a guard on the wall. But most of the time isn't the battle. It's talking to the other people, holding the spear next to you, going, this is boring.
Right.
And you end up caring about people who you wouldn't have chosen based on a picture or on a couple lines of text. Mm-hmm. I have friends who are annoying. Who are really annoying. I'm the annoying friend.
Owen, do we have to talk about something here after this podcast?
And also, I think what I'm trying to tell you is what you already know. I interrupt people because I have ADHD, and you learn over time if you're forced to deal with somebody to put up with it.
Oh, that's a mouthful. I love it. We are notoriously not the best. I'm not going to say bad, but as a species at picking what's that healthy for us? We know that from diet, from what we would eat if we could choose anything, right?
We evolve for scarcity and we pursue sugar. And if we just eat that all day long, we die.
100%, right. Cause and effect. We have to learn. I think behavioral science really needs to lean into it becomes tricky, right? What do you do with this generation of men who are basically being off-ramped from dating or culture at large, when in the past, that bustling kind of friction of strangers interacting, and maybe a guy says something witty, or a woman gets to know him in some way that she's not going to on Tinder, that would have resulted in pairing. How do you go back to that? When people are done with college now, you've said in several moments here in our podcast, you go to school, you have that, you interact. Yeah. And now when that's done, there's a drop, you're done making new friendships unless you take the reins and decide to go do a meetup group, but what's the common standby? Online dating. That's what you're told to do, basically. Like McDonald's, there's a McDonald's, get some food really quick. Go hit Tinder, meet somebody really quick. That's the message, I think, culturally now, is hit online dating, Instagram, do things to put yourself out there and get that gratification. Again, process communication, when really having spans of time where you're exposed to strangers that maybe you feel awkward around or wouldn't immediately choose, is going to generate some very rich potential connections for you.
And so if we're going to kind of pivot a little bit to, what do we do? What's the advice for men?
Great question. Boys? So my advice would be, start small with engaging in some kind of socialization outside your comfort zone. If that's a pickleball league, which that's become very popular, that was even the subject of an article about men's loneliness. Not for nothing. It's, is the cure to male loneliness out on the pickleball court? And so that article explores like men enjoying doing things, like playing a sport is a way to socialize. So if you, I love working with men who say, you know what? I've finally come to therapy. Lay it on me. I've been scared. I don't know what it's going to be. I'm like, hey, guess what? We can make this solution focused. We can, it's tailored to what you need. You don't have to express all your emotions right away. That's a myth. The myth of therapy is one size fits all. And we can get into that in a whole nother episode, but start small with yourself. Start with doing something that you would be comfortable doing. Maybe a hobby or a skill that you've always wanted to learn. Maybe a chess club, whatever. And allow yourself, do some behavioral activation therapy, which simply means be curious if doing something new could help. Be so open-minded.
Do something, comma, anything.
Yes, absolutely. And be honest. I'm going to say, I may enjoy this, I may not. And then afterward, determine if you did and give yourself permission to leave or to not do this, to nope out of it and to say no if it's not for you. But then try something else. Be interested in what you could enjoy as a hobby or a means of socializing with other people, with other guys. Video games are a good way to socialize, I would say, if you're maybe side by side or it's a collaborative game with some communication. I would say, let's not throw the baby out of the bathwater. People talk about video game addiction, how bad it is, but it's like, how's that worse than sitting for an hour and looking at Netflix without watching anything? That's bad. So we pick on different things depending on what's safe to kick in culture. I would say video games could be something. Again, if you're, those interstitial spaces allow you to chat with the other people. Like, people love Dungeons and Dragons.
That's
classic. A huge way that you could get involved with a group of people and your personality elements come out and shine. Because what is Dungeons and Dragons? It's a gamified version of a tribe, of a group of people banding together for a quest. So that's really the key ingredient here is you need a quest and you need some people who are going to be on an adventure with you and you're all awkward together and you're allocating some time to that to say, I'm willing to get to know you to see what you're like here. And we're all doing that. So no one is more off than the other. We're all strangers here. So let's see what happens. Situations like that are going to be crucial.
So invest in killing time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Together.
Yes. And there's meetup groups for it. There's other things you can find, community boards. There's Instagram ads for different things. Like, there's so much you can do to get involved in ways that are structured. Again, where you don't have to feel that you're desperate. It's more, let's do this together. Men don't respond well to pity, but they do respond well to groups and mentorships. Like, it's not for nothing that AA in a lot of groups are where you'll find almost an even gender split when it comes to men's therapy. Why is that? Men enjoy learning that model and they can be a sponsor. They can mentor. So looking to things like that, where you're learning a skill, you're learning a philosophy, you are considered a valuable part and it's not out of pity, it's out of doing something together.
So here's my riff on it and tell me what you think. Mm-hmm. Offer to help.
100% yes. I love that. Because again, volunteering is a completely no pity way to get involved in socializing and feel like you matter.
So it's even volunteering seems like you have to find a place to volunteer. You know what volunteering count? Like, your friend has to move. Help them pack.
100%.
Offer to help. And when you're offering to help, it's a lot like it's the two versions of this. I'm really lonely. Can we spend time together?
Yeah.
Awkward.
Exactly.
Do you have any chores to do this weekend? I'd be happy to help. Do you need to clean out a gutter? Because I'm up for it. Let me know.
I love that, Owen. That's a tell my clients to put their mind in the gutter for one.
Do you need to like clean up your house? Do you need to throw stuff out? And then you're looking side by side at the same problem, which is I got to move that thing down the street, which is a rack for synthesizers that I unplugged. And now I got to take it somewhere, but I can't lift it by myself.
Right.
A lot of people are in that position where they got a thing to do and they're putting it off. What are you putting off? And can I help this weekend?
I love that. So,
and you do that on some cadence once a month. Just at my advice for folks is once more per unit than you would feel like easily comfortable with.
Beautiful.
Because it's going to be never or once a month or once a quarter or once a year. Maybe do it twice a year. Maybe do it every other month. Whatever is one more than you would do naturally, that's what you should do. And the ability to build a community is the, well, that guy's really helpful. Like, you don't have to be smart or funny or attractive to help someone pack.
Mm-hmm.
And none of those things are expected of you. And you don't even have to be good friends. Look, I got some time to kill this weekend. I just like helping people clean their shit up.
Right.
It's calming for me. So if I can be like, 10 people say no and one person will say yes, and you'll have something to do every weekend.
I like it. This is spring cleaning season too, when we're filming this. So what, this is what good psychiatrists do, right?
Come up with ways to be a community together, and word gets out.
Right.
That Jeremy is great at helping you clean out your garage. You should call him. And it doesn't cost anything.
Right.
It's free.
Barrier to entry.
No barrier to entry. That's my riff on it. And thanks for having this conversation.
Thank you. Oh, and this, as usual, this was a dynamic interplay of jokes and learning content.
We made it up. And this is a good example. We do this podcast together because we like spending time together. And this is a way we can do it. And we have an excuse, which is an activity, which is making a podcast.
Yes.
Which all of them get to benefit from. And so we don't need to, Jeremy, I'm lonely. I just want to talk to you. That's a little more awkward. Hey, let's do a podcast. Great.
Yes.
Right. And so we got to do a guy thing together. We learned something. We did something. We created something. And here we are for the rest of you. But the method is the message. This has been the Frontier Psychiatrist Podcast. And thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.